Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and some of you listening now probably woke up to this chilling statement on Morning Edition by former FAA flight inspector David Soucy.
Basically, right now, I personally would get on a 737. What I probably wouldn't do today is put my family on a 737-8. I don't know why that's different for me, but it certainly is.
Soucy, who is author of the book Why Planes Crash, was, of course, referring to the new divide in the world following Sunday's plane crash of an Ethiopia Airlines jet, the second in 6 months of a Boeing 737 MAX 8. 346 people have died between the two crashes. In Soucy's case, the divide is between a risk he would take for himself but wouldn't subject his family to. As you heard, there's a divide internationally too. China, Indonesia, Singapore, and as of this morning, Australia and the UK have temporarily grounded that model plane while they figure out what the heck is going on. The UK also announced that it's banning MAX 8s from even flying over its airspace. Other countries, including the United States, have not taken any such action. Some individual airlines have also temporarily grounded the planes, including close to home Aeromexico, but not the U.S.-based carriers that use the planes. Media reports say American Airlines has 24 of them, Southwest has 34. Some members of Congress are calling for a temporary grounding. So why the divide? What's the debate? And what should you do if you or a loved one is scheduled to fly on an airline that uses MAX 8s? With me now are two guests, George Hamlin, who runs Hamlin Transportation Consulting, an independent advisory and consulting service providing strategic counsel and analysis to the transportation industry with an emphasis on commercial aviation and aerospace, and Jerry Shi, who is the Beijing correspondent for The Washington Post. So, George and Jerry, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Bud.
George, the 737 MAX 8 is a fairly new model plane, isn't it?
Yes, it is essentially the, I guess, fourth generation of 737, which is a pretty amazing statement.
Do you know how long these two that crashed have been in use?
The two particular airplanes? No, I do not.
Or how about the model in general?
Well, there are about, 350, I think, that have been delivered already. It's been in the last couple years. It is becoming more and more commonplace.
And you say it's the fourth generation of 737s. What distinguishes a MAX 8 from other 737s or other planes its size?
Well, the generations, you had the original 737, which was the 1 and 200 series, starting in the late 1960s. The so-called classics, which used high-bypass turbofan, which is now standard on this aircraft type, entered service in 84, 85. The next generation, which involved putting a new wing on the airplane, arrived in the early 2000s, and then the MAX 8 is the latest version. It has new, more powerful, more fuel-efficient engines and some, I think, modest structural changes to it, but nothing like on the order of a new wing again.
Jerry Shi, Beijing correspondent for The Washington Post. China, I believe, was the first country to ground the MAX 8 after Sunday's crash. Tell us what China did and why.
Sure. So the Chinese Civil Aviation Authority basically came out first thing Monday morning after the Sunday crash and said that it would instruct all of China's carriers to ground their 737 MAX. So that's about 96 of them. That accounts for something like about a quarter of all of the planes currently in operation in the world today. And the move was pretty striking, not only for sort of the number of planes that it affected, but basically it was unprecedented. So Chinese authorities basically until now have basically moved lockstep or following the FAA. And basically, by coming out and saying that they were going to be the first ones to do that, they basically sort of pulled the finger from the dike. And essentially in the last 24 hours, we've seen roughly 10 copies or more similar statements. So that includes Australia, Singapore, Indonesia, and very significantly Britain in the last couple of hours. And people are watching to see if there might now even be EU-wide ban of some sort.
Is there, as far as you could tell, Jerry, a simple explanation for why some countries are grounding Max 8s for now and some, including the U.S., are not?
It's hard to say. You know, if we were to look at just the China situation, you know, we do know that China, you know, has sort of wanted to have more of a say on international aviation. You know, within the next decade, it's going to become the world's largest aviation market. And we do know that Chinese regulators generally are very, very careful, very, very conservative when it comes to safety regulations. You know, there's been some suggestion that China may have been slightly opportunistic, taking this chance to kind of stick a finger out at an American company at a time when China's been in this trade war with the U.S. Chinese officials, of course, have said that, no, this has nothing to do with politics. It's got nothing to do with trade. And in fact, they've just been frustrated that, you know, they have asked Boeing, they've asked FAA for a couple of months now, after since the October crash in Indonesia, for more information about what really is going on with this model airplane. And they just haven't gotten the satisfactory answers. So there's been concerns among Chinese pilots as well that, you know, maybe this plane isn't something that they're familiar with. And maybe, you know, some of that thinking has also fueled this decision that took a lot of people by surprise in China.
So, George Hamlin, let me go to you on the same question. Maybe when China stepped out front in the way it did, the obvious questions that Jerry was just raising from Beijing there, is China trying to stick it in the eye of the United States a little bit, where, of course, Boeing is an American company, or just trying to establish its leadership in the world, so it's kind of a political thing. But maybe that concern becomes moot now that the UK has done the same thing. How do you see the divide between the countries that have and have not grounded the Max 8 so far?
Well, I think it's not so much the countries, which, as you're pointing out, you've got two very different entities in terms of China and the UK. Put this in a personal perspective. I've been weighing what needs to be done here or what not. And what we have is two crashes that have a pattern in some cases, you know, the excessive flight movements, almost roller coaster type. This has happened twice. That may be coincidental. There may be two different causes. But what I think is that we've had two of those. They're very strange. We don't know the cause yet. Let's not have a third. It is time for this aircraft to take a rest until we can get to the bottom of what happened in both cases, in my opinion.
What can you tell about any relationship between the two crashes? I've heard varying accounts by analysts, frankly, over the last day, saying there do seem to be some similarities, or there don't seem to be some similarities.
It's too soon to tell. We need to get the answers, the results from both crashes, and that doesn't happen in 48 hours, unfortunately.
Do you see politics at play in the U.S. Not grounding the planes when other countries have? Could it be anything about, you know, international competitiveness, or a question of a lot of political influence in Washington by Boeing, anything like that?
No, I don't think it's politics. I think it's simply inertia. As I stated earlier, there are 300-plus of these airplanes flying on multiple flights a day, and they seem to be doing fine. If you look at this on a, you know, very cynically on a percentage basis, well, you know, the percentage of accidents is very low. I don't think it's political. I think it's something that, you know, we reached a point where some difficult decisions need to be made, and it's, you know, there's historical precedent. We can talk about that later if you'd like. But no, we have to find out what happened with both before we can decide whether they were the same, different, or there was something in between.
And the transportation secretary is Elaine Chao, wife of Mitch McConnell. So people will wonder, so I will ask, if there are any power politics in play here that pertain to the Senate and McConnell and then up the chain to the executive branch. But I think you're saying you don't think so.
I don't think so. I certainly don't know. They don't speak to me about it.
Jerry Shi, Beijing correspondent for The Washington Post. How long are they saying in China, if they are saying, do they think the Max 8s will have to be grounded before they can be given a a clean bill of health or not?
Right now, it's pretty open-ended. So the government agency has said that they will resume flights as soon as they can get safety guarantees from Boeing. That's pretty open-ended. Boeing China, the China office has said that they expect a software update in the coming weeks. So it could potentially be several weeks before we see these planes back in the sky.
And what's your estimate, George, as to how long it will take, since you are now also advocating that there be a timeout for this particular model plane while engineers figure out what's going on? How long do you think that would take?
Well, at the least, I read in Aviation Week, I think as recently as this morning, Boeing is going to put out a revised version of some of the control software for the airplane, I think next week. It would be reasonable to wait until that was available, understood, the training aspects of it could be arranged, et cetera.
And listeners, we can take some phone calls with your questions for our guest, Jerry Shi, Beijing correspondent for The Washington Post, covering the grounding of the Boeing 737 MAX 8s there, and aviation consultant George Hamlin with his broad view of this. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And let's take a call. Tom in Holmdel, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Good morning. I was in the aircraft, I worked for an aircraft manufacturer for a while. I'm not going to give you the name, but I'm an aircraft enthusiast, of course. What I found out was this. The Ethiopian airliner that crashed was only 4 months old and had 1,200 hours on it. And I do believe the Indonesian airplane was about 6 months old, but it apparently had a record of problems that caused the plane to be grounded a few times. I don't know the details of it, but from the sketchy stuff that I was able to extract from the media, this is what I found.
Tom, thank you very much. Does that inform your analysis in any way, George?
The fact that they were both relatively new airplanes, no. If you look at the history, there have been incidents of aircraft types that had patterns of early accidents. The most famous, of course, is the original commercial jet, the Comet. Both the Boeing 727 and the Airbus A320 had some early teething problem type accidents. They involved interaction between human beings and machines. It was the terminology used. The Lockheed Electra had structural problems, and at the least, I don't recall if the aircraft were grounded, but it had to be slowed down until the problem was understood and then able to be fixed. And finally, of course, one that is probably more recent in most people's mind is the grounding of the DC-10s in, I think, about 1979 after a fatal accident.
Debbie in Lacey Township, you're on WNYC. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. We have a very personal concern right now because our daughter's due to fly to Ireland on one of those planes tomorrow. So very personal concern and question about that. Part one is, what as a parent would you do in this situation? And number two is this the hesitancy of the airlines to ground these planes, is it due to a revenue, loss of revenue issue?
George?
I think there's several things in play. If you ground an aircraft type, let's go back to the DC-10. People are inconvenienced. Some people don't get where they're going in a timely fashion, and that may be critical in a few cases, although they're still alive. The economics of this, yes, it's a pretty expensive proposition to take, you know, a brand new airplane and the crews that would fly it and put them on the ground for a while. However, over a 20 or 25 year life, this really becomes sort of a footnote in the economic sense, even of that airplane.
Is there anything you can say as an aviation consultant to inform Debbie's decision? It must be horrible to be in this position. Her daughter is scheduled to fly tomorrow on a 737 MAX 8 to Ireland, she said. What would you advise her?
Well, Debbie and her family have to make their own decision, and you've got to weigh the factors. One thing I would like to point out, I think the entire commercial aviation industry, particularly those still flying the airplane, are very cognizant of this. And I think people are looking, you know, to basically have the operating crews take every precaution necessary. In the end of the day, it's an individual decision. Given what's going on, I would hope that the airlines would not be obstreperous about rescheduling or rebooking, you know, particularly from, you know, a fee standpoint, for example.
Right. So you think that perhaps people should at least ask the airline if they're personally uncomfortable taking a flight that they've paid for to refund their ticket?
A refund or find some way to reschedule it, yes.
Yeah. Debbie, how are you going to decide?
I'm wondering, though, the crash in October, the way I understood at the time that the pilots were even unable to counteract the autopilot that was sending the plane to a nosedive. Is that true?
George?
I'm not sure that's the complete description. They did have difficulty controlling the airplane, and I believe the Ethiopian crew also reported difficulties and had requested to come back to the airport at Addis Ababa.
Debbie, thank you, and good luck with your daughter in deciding whether she's going to fly tomorrow. Jerry Shi in Beijing, is there international competitiveness involved in this at the business level? Like, does China make planes that compete with Boeing, and maybe they want to make Boeing look bad, anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of the bilateral relationship, there isn't any direct competitors to Boeing, obviously. The only one that exists is European, and that's Airbus. China has a very nascent aviation industry. Obviously, it's a matter of high national priority, and so the Chinese government has rolled out its first passenger aircraft, which is called the C-919. It has had some trouble getting some early stage certification in the West, and you know, there has been some speculation that, you know, the Chinese have been a bit frustrated that getting this new Chinese built plane certified hasn't gone as well as they could have hoped, and so, you know, this, as George said, is another chance for them to kind of stick it in the U.S.'s eye. At the same time, you know, Boeing has actually recently opened major plants in eastern China's Zhejiang province to produce some of these planes. So, you know, if you know, what hurts Boeing may not necessarily be great for China in the long run.
Here's a pilot and flight instructor calling in. Greg in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Thanks so much for calling, Greg. Hi.
Yeah. Hi, Brian. Good morning. Yeah, I just had the New York Times published an article about a very, very accurate, what I thought was a very accurate article about a month ago, specifically on the MAX 8, and really describing the development of that airplane as Boeing tries to compete with Airbus, putting new engines on the airplane. And this clearly is, at least in my mind, as a pilot and instructor, this is a software computer related problem. I mean, there's fundamentally nothing wrong with the airplane itself. It's an airplane. It's structurally sound. It has a long history, but there is a problem in the controllability of it under certain rare situations. The point I want to make, Brian, for your listeners is there's a training element here, because the system that is causing this airplane to pitch down, to nose over, if that's what's happened in these two accidents, that system can be disabled by the pilots, and it can be disabled almost within 30 seconds simply by pushing a sequence of buttons. They have to be trained to do that, and then they would not, no longer, once they disable the system, they wouldn't have the additional protection that that system is meant to provide to the airplane. But again, fundamentally, in my view, there's nothing wrong with the airplane. There's a problem with software and there's a problem with training, and that may assist some of your listeners in terms of their decisions.
Greg, thank you very much. And Jerry Shi in Beijing, I don't know if you can comment on that, but I did see in one of the other articles on this in the Washington Post today some speculation that training could have been an issue, that the U.S. is particularly strong at training its pilots, and maybe training isn't at that level in some other countries.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we actually spoke to a very young Chinese pilot, also some other people in sort of Chinese aviation circles. And, you know, what we heard was that, at least in the case of China, after the October Lion Air crash, Boeing, of course, sent a worldwide notice to pilots, mostly through the national regulators, informing them that this software system that they may not previously have been aware of, which automatically sort of tips the nose down, as your last caller mentioned, that this system exists. They need to be aware of it. But at least in the case of China, there hasn't actually been sort of systematic countrywide training or sort of you know, simulation programs to teach pilots how to deal with the existence of this new software that's in the new airplane. At the same time, and let me just add that this pilot that we spoke to said that, you know, this was actually quite a well-known issue with this plane. He had experienced it himself, where he said that even though that the plane that he was flying was climbing by 10 degrees, he appeared to get readings that it was climbing much steeper angle, and that this software that we're talking about kicked into effect and temporarily threw the plane into a bit of a loss of control.
Right. So
at the same time, we've talked about...
Go ahead.
Please.
Sorry. Go ahead.
At the same time, we talked to other Chinese pilots who said, look, everybody knows about this issue now after the Indonesia. Everybody now should know that, you know, this software could be disabled basically by a push of the button, and you could sort of, you know, regain control of the airplane within a few seconds. So some are saying, kind of poo-pooing this call for kind of broad additional training for pilots.
We have a few minutes left to finish up on the news about the grounding of the Boeing 737 MAX 8 jets in the UK as of a few hours ago, the latest country to both ground their fleet and say no MAX 8s over their airspace for now, thank you, in addition to China, Indonesia, Singapore, and Australia, the U.S. so far not. And talking about it with Gary Shi, Beijing correspondent for the Washington Post, and aviation consultant George Hamlin. George, before we go, President Trump is weighing in on this on Twitter, and I'm going to read a couple of his tweets here, which actually do go to the issue of software that we were just talking about. He doesn't tweet a policy recommendation here to ground the planes or not, but the president tweets, airplanes are becoming far too complex to fly. Pilots are no longer needed, but rather computer scientists from MIT. I see it all the time in many products, always seeking to go one unnecessary step further, when often old and simpler is far better. Split-second decisions are needed, and the complexity creates danger. All of this for great cost, yet very little gain. I don't know about you, but I don't want Albert Einstein to be my pilot. I want great flying professionals that are allowed to easily and quickly take control of a plane. George, how much are you rolling your eyes?
There's much of interest in this, to say the least. Systems have become far more complex, but look, we're not going back to the era of piston engines, for example, which, by the way, were actually more complex than their jet successors in many cases in terms of operation and maintenance. Yes, you want the proper person flying, or pilots today, in addition to hopefully having great flying skills, also are managers of significant enterprises while they're performing commercial airline flights. you know, there's a lot going on in this. There are many systems. Simplicity is better than complexity where possible, but you know, people not you know, no one wants to dress up in a fur coat or you know, or today's you know alternative with synthetics to fly in an airplane. They want it to be comfortable, heated. They want to be entertained. They want to have Wi-Fi. These things are not going away.
But to the premise of the remark, do you think planes are in general less safe for the complexity today, or more safe? I think the rate of airline accidents, certainly in the United States, I don't know about globally, has declined over the years.
Oh, we had several years of no accidents, at least in the United States, and you know, for much of the world. No, safety has gotten better and better. Now it's the kind of thing you can never let up on the drive to have zero defects. Literally, it is not easy. You've got to constantly pay attention, but. Yes, we have been getting there, I think, in pretty good style.
I'm going to take one more call with probably a political observation. Akoji in Manhattan. Akoji, you're on WNYC. We just have like 20 seconds for you.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
I can.
All right. So, yeah, so my statement was just in regards to the victims. It seems like the two accidents that happened were outside the United States. I feel like if this happened in the U.S. soil, we probably have had some congressional hearings and some urgent, you know, approach to resolving these issues. I would just like to, you know, get the experts' opinion on that.
Akoji, thank you very much. Certainly, if these accidents had happened in the United States, George, the U.S. fleet of this model plane would be grounded. You know, and there is a tendency, a human tendency, to dismiss something that happens far away as less dangerous than it might be and its implications for us or less relevant to our lives. It's a risk in news coverage when something really important is going on elsewhere in the world and we don't give it enough attention because, oh, this doesn't seem like it affects us and doesn't seem relatable. To what degree do you think that's happening here, and to what degree do you think the judgment that's being made by the U.S. government has to do with the fact that the situations are actually really different despite the plane being the same?
Well, they are far away. They are different. If it happened in this case, we've had plenty of airplane fatal accidents in the last 20 years with airplanes in this country where the types weren't grounded. I think that's a little bit of a broad statement. Now, mm-hmm. The fact that if let's say there were a third accident now and it were in the U.S., well, after you have three in a row, I think it definitely would get some attention.
We will leave it there for now with George Hamlin, who runs Hamlin Transportation Consulting, an independent advisory and consulting service providing strategic counsel and analysis to the transportation industry. He did add his voice during this segment to those calling for the Boeing 737 MAX 8 jets to be grounded temporarily and assessed in this country as well. And we thank Jerry Shi, Beijing correspondent for The Washington Post, after China led the way on this temporary grounding. Thank you both very, very much.